and 080363, State Office of Risk Management versus Mary Lawton.
May it please the court, Mr. Lepofsky will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Section 409.021 of the Texas Labor Code gives insurance carriers up to 60 days to contest compensability of an injury, after which the right to do so is generally waived. However, Commission Rule 124.3E provides that this statute is not applicable to disputes over extent of injury. In this case, the court below found that Storm's dispute constituted an extent of injury dispute. Nevertheless, it applied Section 409.021's 60-day waiver provision and held that Storm's complaint was untimely and therefore waived. This decision must be reversed. It is not supported by 409.021, and it is in direct conflict with Rule 124.3E and the Commission's intent in adopting the rule.
Who makes that determination on the extent of injury versus the injury? I mean, you have a contusion versus some with degenerative disease in the knee. I mean, that doesn't seem anything to do with extent. It seems either you have a contusion that's related to the other knee damage, or they're two separate events. They seem to be two separate events.
Well, Justice Medina, that's actually precisely what an extensive injury dispute is. And if you look to the Texas Register, it explains what an extensive dispute injury is. I'm quoting from the Texas Register here. It says that when you're challenging extent of injury, you're not denying the compensability of a claim as a whole. What you're doing is it's a challenge over the amount or type of medical benefits to which the employee is entitled, i.e., what body area, systems, injuries, conditions, or symptoms for which the employee is entitled to treatment. It's not a denial of the employee's entitlement to benefits in general. So what we're looking to here is there's been an injury. We all understand that there's been an injury. As a result of that injury, what medical treatments are going to follow? Here, the medical treatment that was requested was for a degenerative condition of the knee. That's different from the injury as a whole, and that's why this is precisely what an extent of injury dispute would cover, as the court below correctly found. Now, the fact that this is an extent dispute has a dramatic effect on the time to dispute the issue and the consequences for failing to timely do so. As I mentioned, under 409.021, carriers have 60 days for notice to dispute the injury and to dispute the extent of the, compensability, and the failure to do so generally results in waiver. But Rule 124.3 provides, quote, Texas Labor Code, Section 409.021, and subsection A of the section do not apply to disputes over extent of injury. This rule sets a different time frame for disputing extent of injury. It's one that's tied to the deadline to pay the medical bill for the condition at issue. This rule's
What is that deadline?
The deadline is 45 days from the receipt of the medical bill. Rule is promulgated by an administrative agency acting within its statutory authority, so it has the force and effect of legislation. But the 10th Court failed to follow this rule. Despite acknowledging it was an extent of injury dispute, it applied the 60-day waiver provision. And in doing so, it created a new exception to Rule 124.3E and held that Storm had to dispute extent of injury within 409.021's 60-day waiver period because it was on notice that she sought benefits for something more than a contusion and was in a position to dispute extent of injury during that time.
Some benefits paid during the initial period of time for the contusion to the knee?
She received benefits, Your Honor, for the contusion, and I believe temporary income benefits. So benefits were initiated.
Okay, and then at some point the request for benefits seemed to be something different or more than a contusion is your position?
Correct. At some point in time they received notice that they were seeking to do medical treatment for the degenerative changes to the knee. Now, the exception created by this court is unsupported by the text of 409.021. As I mentioned, it's in direct conflict with the rule and the Commission's intent in adopting the rule. I'd like to examine each. First, with respect to the text of the statute, as recognized by the 10th Court of Appeals in a prior decision, TIG Premier Insurance Company versus Pemberton, the statute pertains only to the overall injury and pertains to the carrier's initial response to notice that an employee has been injured. It does discuss extent of injury disputes. Now let's examine Rule 124.3E. It's in direct conflict with this rule for two reasons. The first is obvious. It says Section 409.021 does not apply to extent of injury disputes, but there's a second reason. The principle of reasonable discovery is not applicable to extent disputes. Rule 124.3A imposes an obligation on carriers to conduct an investigation into the compensability of an injury, the carrier's liability for the injury, and the accrual of benefits. But Rule 124.3E expressly provides that this obligation to investigate does not apply to extent of injury disputes. For this additional reason, the decision of the court below conflicts with Rule 124.3E. It effectively imposes an obligation on carriers to investigate extent of injury disputes, even though the rule says no such obligation exists.
fine.
What if the notice of injury had said something like contusion and possible severe chondromalacia? Then where would the carrier be?
I'm sorry, the last part of that question.
Then where would the carrier be?
Notice of the injury really does not have anything to do with the extent of injury dispute. What the notice of injury...
Doesn't it tell you what the injury, what the asserted injury is?
It gives you notice that there has been an injury. Right. But it does not necessarily mean that that is actually going to be the injury that's compensable. For example, it could be something that was reported to the employer, and then the employer reports it to the carrier, but there's been no doctor involved yet in that process. So it doesn't really do a good job of defining what the compensable injury is.
What if she fell and contused her knee and started getting treatment for that, and 6 or 7 months later her back started giving her problems, and she goes to a back doctor who says, well, no prior problem. It looks to me like when she fell, what she did is damage the disc, and so now that emanates from the injury. Is that extent of injury, or is that what's the position on that?
That would be another example of extent of injury, and that's set out in the preamble, which actually discusses that type of situation where.
In that case, where no one knew about the back injury, but they knew about the incident. Your position is, once you have the incident, then you're liable for everything that emanates from that, but you can't discover it all up front. Is that your position, basically?
Yes. The position is that the extent of the compensable injury is going to be defined over time as medical bills come in. That's exactly what Rule 124.3 contemplates when it's tying it to the deadline to pay or deny the medical bill. In fact, we look at the Texas Register, which reflects the intent of the commission. It points out that it reflects that the commission considered a proposal to standardize the rule with one time frame to cover all denials.
Let me just backtrack there for a second.
Yes, Justin Medina.
A little confused. You said this is determined when the bills come in and then they are to be paid?
Yes, Your Honor. Extent of injury disputes arise when the bills come into the carrier.
There's never a doctor's report that's reviewed prior to the bills being received? To study whether or not it's a compensable injury?
That does not have any role, Your Honor, in defining the extent of the compensable injury. It comes from the medical bills.
Is your position consistent with the position that the commission has taken on this?
Yes, it is, Justice Jefferson.
Your opposing counsel says it's contrary.
Well, I think that what you have to look to is, what is the commission? What do we look to determine what is the commission's intent in this circumstance? There are commission appeals panel decisions which hold otherwise. The commission appeals panel decisions are to the effect that the nature of the injury will be defined by that information that could have been reasonably discovered in the carrier's investigation prior to the expiration of the waiver period. But these appeals panel decisions, while they are normally entitled to deference, they are not entitled to deference if they are plainly erroneous and inconsistent with the text of the rule. That's what this court held in Rodriguez versus Service Lloyds Insurance Company. And that case has applicability here. In Rodriguez, the court reviewed the interpretation of a commission rule that, quote, the first impairment rating assigned to an employee is considered binding if it is not disputed within 90 days of assignment. The plaintiff in that case argued that she was entitled to exceptions to this rule, including substantial change of condition. And indeed, a commission appeals panel decision had held that there were exceptions to the rule, including one for substantial change of condition. When this court got that decision, it looked at the text of the rule. It found no exception.
The problem I'm having, though, is it seems like compensability and extent of injury are sort of on a continuum. And, of course, this rule is fairly plain. It says doesn't apply to extent of injury, but just begs the question, where in the continuum does the line fall? It seems like a carrier could take the position, reported an injury at work, it said a back injury, but we take the position that, sure, the worker may have twisted a muscle or something, a fairly insignificant injury, but not anything like this major surgery that was required to fix the spine. And you could move that continuum back and forth. And so how do we resolve that?
Well, Justice Heck, the difference between compensability of an injury and extent of injury is the difference between denial of an entire claim and denying or looking at pieces of the claim as they come and then deciding whether or not those particular pieces are entitled to benefits, those particular pieces are compensable. And that's reflected, really, in the Texas Register, which states, quote, the time frames for a denial of a claim, when it's dealing with compensability, 409 and 21, the time frames for denial of a claim in its entirety are statutorily driven by Texas Labor Code Section 409.021. So, again, it talks about compensability being a denial of an entire claim.
Well, I understand that, but I guess what I'm saying is I suppose no carrier would object to admitting that $10 was compensable. They would just object to admitting that any of the rest of it was compensable and want to reserve the right to challenge that. But surely there are lots of cases where there was looked like a relatively minor injury at work, twisted back or something, and then it turns out to be much more severe than that. So how do you draw the line between that appearance and what later looks like extent of injury?
Because the extent of injury is going to arise when you get that medical bill. So as soon as you get that, that's when you start the dispute process. That's when you start the evaluation process. And if there is a dispute, that's when it goes through the normal procedures.
Well, then what do you have to do in the first 60 days?
Within the first 60 days, you have to make a decision as to whether or not there has been an injury that is work-related, number one, compensability of an injury. You also have to make a decision whether there's any exceptions to liability that are applicable within the first 60 days. Was the employee intoxicated? Was there horseplay, personal animosity, these type of exceptions? Those are what you have to look at as to the overall injury. Then as time goes on, we start to look at and define the scope, the extent of the injury, and what is compensable as a result of the overall injury.
But a degenerative disease wouldn't be compensable because it didn't happen at work.
One would assume, unless it was, you know, perhaps carpal tunnel syndrome or something like that. I don't know if that would be a degenerative disease.
And yet you're arguing here that's extent. So it seems to me to be both compensability and extent of injury.
Well, we're looking as to what was the extent of the compensable injury, the overall injury. What did it include? She's not making a separate claim that on a separate day there's a separate injury. This is for treatment for a condition. We're looking at, is she entitled to treatment for this degenerative knee condition because the degenerative knee condition is related to the bump on the knee, the initial injury, which was the bruise. And what we're saying is no. There is no relationship between the two. That's the essence of an extent of injury dispute.
But I guess here's what I'm struggling with. If it happened at home instead of at work, you'd have to deny that in 60 days.
If that was the only injury that was being claimed.
But if both of them happen at work, that's the allegation, the contusion and the degenerative disease, you don't have to challenge compensability of the latter. And I'm struggling with how you know the difference.
Well, the difference is, when you're looking at compensability, the difference is, in essence, was there an injury on the job? And at that point in time, we're trying to define the extent and the scope of injury after that. But that doesn't have anything to do with the 60 days. It's an initial up or down as to whether there was an injury on the job. Then we examine what that injury would include. So what we have to focus on is here, the initial reported injury was a contusion. Then, later, we get a report that there's a degenerative knee condition.
If the initial report had been contusion and degenerative conditions, then you would have to object within 60 days.
Justice Brister, that would actually not make any difference. We would have to object within 60 days if we were going to deny the entire claim and say neither the bruise or the degenerative knee condition or whatever it may be occurred. But if we get a report that indicates there's a number of problems with this individual as a result of an incident at work, defining actually what is compensable is the process of extensive injury. That's where you have the extensive injury disputes. We're trying to give contours. We're trying to get the extent of the injury through the receipt of medical bills.
It's difficult to write an opinion that would cover abuses of the system, but do you concede that there is at least a possibility that an employer could in effect deny a claim, pay the $10 that Justice Heck mentioned, but in effect deny a claim well beyond the 60 days that the 409 section permits by saying this is an issue of extent and not compensability?
Well, first of all, it would be...
And what are the limits on that? How could that sort of abuse be reined in ever?
Just to clarify first, it would be a carrier, not the employer that would do that.
A carrier.
And in such circumstances, the carrier does not have a motive to go ahead and just frivolously deny extent of injury disputes. If they have an extent of injury dispute and they're wrong, they're going to have to pay interest on whatever benefits were supposed to be paid. There also have the concerns about spending money to hire a physician, to hire an attorney, to go through the extensive injury dispute process. The care is not going to have these types of the care is not going to be motivated.
They do have a motive to avoid the 60-day deadline.
The
carrier wouldn't care if the carrier would much prefer a 180-day deadline or a 4-year deadline or something.
And that could be a policy decision, Your Honor, but the rule is very explicit and very clear. There are deadlines for extent of injury disputes, and those deadlines are 45 days from the date you receive. I'm sorry, may I finish, Your Honor?
You can complete your thought.
Those deadlines run from the date of receipt of the medical bill. They do have a deadline. The only difference is there is no draconian provision with respect to waiver for not doing that within the 45 days.
If you don't get the bill for 6 months, then you get 6 months plus 45 days.
Justice Weiner, that would be an unusual circumstance because you have to get billed within 95 days of the treatment. But once you get that bill, then your 45-day timeline has started.
So you get 95 days plus 45 days.
If the doctor does not want to get paid immediately and waste the full 95 days, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Any further questions? Court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Lewis will present argument for the respondent. Ms. Cheney will present argument for the Office of Injured Employee Counsel. Mr. Lewis will open with the first 15 minutes.
May it please the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. As counsel for Sorum has said, this case is an appeal by Sorum of an appeal award of workers' compensation benefits in favor of Ms. Mary Lawton. This case involves a proper interpretation of sections 409.021 and 409.022, as well as Rule 124.3, rules of the division.
Let me just ask you, what do you think the first sentence of that rule means?
Well, Judge, you have to look at the origin of the rule. The rule was adopted in the year 2000. 9 years after the effective date of the major revisions to the Texas Workers' Compensation Act. And at that time, there were some appeals panel cases that said that if there was a diagnosis after the 60-day period, that then started a new 60-day time limit for the carrier to waiver. To waive. So, for an example, let's say an injured person had a back injury on day one, and on day 120, a doctor diagnosed shoulder injury. This prior appeal panel said, well, when the shoulder injury is diagnosed, another 60-day waiver period has started. And the division felt that was not what the statute implied, and so they adopted 124.3, I think, to limit the waiver period to the 60-day period, the initial 60-day period to which it was originally intended.
So you don't get another 60 days.
That's right.
But surely you can contend that the shoulder's not
absolutely
shoulder's
absolutely.
Not connected to the back bone.
And this case is not about that. In this case, we have...
Say absolutely, but then you say that's a part of... If it happened in the first 60 days, they would lose their right to claim that this was not a furtherance of the initial injury.
That's right. That I think, is a purpose of the waiver rule, as well as 124.3 also says that the carrier has a duty to investigate the compensability of the injury. Another purpose of Rule 124.3 was to further define the duty of the insurance carrier to investigate the compensability of the injury.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. What if someone falls, they go to the hospital, and they find the claim is, I've got a problem with my back, my shoulder's hurting, and they also find that there's a heart problem in there. Now, does the carrier have to dispute the injury in order to dispute the heart problem? And the shoulder problem, if the shoulder problem preexisted, or does it simply have to dispute things, or can they say, we're not disputing the injury, but we're not liable for this shoulder that he hurt 3 or 4 years ago, and we're not liable for the heart problem, goodness sakes. How do we handle that? What's the dispute? Do they dispute the injury?
Well, I think you have to look at what the injury is and what is claimed by the claimant.
Okay,
if the claimant is claiming a heart injury,
but
then
they're not disputing the incident on the job.
Right.
You fell backwards
right.
and hurt something. They're
right.
not disputing that.
Right.
So they're not disputing injury. So is it once we don't dispute the incident and some harm from it, do we then go into extent, or do we have to dispute every particular part of the body? And we
I think the carrier has a duty to investigate the compensability of the injury, and the injury is all those areas that were potentially damaged in the incident.
Well,
how can you investigate if you don't send him to a doctor? Wouldn't you have to send him to every doctor there was to be sure it wasn't anything but a back injury or but a shoulder injury?
Well, I think all the rule contemplates is that the carrier do a reasonable investigation within the 60-day period. Now, I may point out that this rule is not a hard burden to meet by the insurance carrier. In our case, Mrs. Lawton just injured her knee. We're not talking about multiple parts of the body. But on day one of the accident, she was diagnosed with a left knee contusion and a left knee sprain. On day 9, she was diagnosed with traumatic left knee prepatellar bursitis. And on day 26, we have an MRI that says she had severe chondromalacia of the left knee. Now, all of those diagnoses pertain to the left knee.
And how soon did the day 26 report get to the carrier?
It got to the carrier. I misspoke. Day 26 is when the carrier received the MRI report. The MRI report was done about 5 or 6 days earlier than that.
So under the Court of Appeals opinion, even though you have a firm 60-day window in the statute, they really had 34 days to deny that claim or to admit compensability.
Right. That's right. The 60-day period is their period to investigate the claim, and they're supposed to do a thorough investigation.
If it had been day 56, they'd have had 4 days.
Well, now, that was pointed out in some of the amicus briefs. Is this an unfair rule? What if you got the report on day 58 or 59 or something like that? But there is a standard of reasonableness in the rule, or as interpreted by the appeals panel, and there have been subsequent appeals panel decisions.
Well, the whole idea of this system was to take it out of the courts.
Right.
And if the dispute's going to be what should the carrier should have known before the 60-day deadline closed, every case is going to be in court.
Well, I think if it's a late the document that came into existence on day 59 or day 60, I don't think – I mean, those cases, there have been appeals panel cases contested case hearing officer, which is an administrative judge, found that, well, for day 59, they didn't have enough time to find that.
How much time do they get then? How much additional time do they get to contest? Is that just up to the administrative judge or what?
Well, the rule is whether or not the diagnosis was reasonably discoverable within the 60-day period.
But if they get past 60, they've got forever.
That's right. Absolutely. If the MRI, in our case, had been done on day 75, they'd have no duty to deny it at all.
Well, to get to Judge Brister's, back to Judge Brister's question, it just seems to me a terrible idea to have this huge, heavily laden issue, because it's going to determine whether you can assert lack of compensability or not, depend on whether you did enough investigation prior to 60 days. Isn't that a terrible idea?
No, it doesn't. I think it compels the insurance carriers to do their job. And I just want to make one point here. The appeals panel has said that an insurance carrier may make a limited denial of the claim. In fact, in this case, SORM could have easily come in and said, we think it's contusion, we deny, we accept a contusion, and we deny all other diagnoses.
And I read that, so I thought, well, isn't that just what they're going to do, and so then why are we here?
Well, they didn't do that. They didn't deny
anything. But if they start doing it, then why are we here?
Well, if they didn't do that, at least the injured worker is put on notice from early on in the claim that we've got a dispute, and she can proceed on through the dispute resolution process of the division.
She can do that as soon as they send a bill for the other stuff. She doesn't lose anything.
Well, she does lose something, because oftentimes the bill that's disputed is much later in the process. In our case, we had was diagnosed with a contusion and a sprain. She went to a doctor within a week, and he said, no, it's more than that. And she had an MRI, and the MRI said severe chondromalacia of the left knee, which is a serious...
They're going to do anything expensive. They're going to have to get pre-authorization anyway.
But what happens is usually the claimant has some conservative care before they jump right to surgery. In this case, that's what happened. Ms. Lawton had therapy for a period of time, and then finally, and benefits were being paid. All medical bills were being paid. And then when we got down to surgery, which was months later, then... the dispute comes, and this is how this case, the argument of SORM would be so abusive. They would have potentially someone could not deny a claim, pay the medical for years and years and years, and then finally say, you know what, we're tired of paying on this case. We're going to assert this is only a contusion, even though they had accepted everything and paid everything up to that point.
Counsel, but the irony of your position is the tighter you make the window on being able to allege extent of injury rather than compensability, the more you're going to encourage carriers to deny the claims on the front end, because you're going to make the hole to jump through on extent of injury smaller. So you're going to encourage more denials rather than parties trying to take a good faith look at what is really compensability and what is really extent.
Well, if the carriers do their job, thoroughly investigate the case, and in good faith file a denial within the 60 days, I have no problem with that. At least the parties know what their positions are from the very beginning.
Well, but aren't you encouraging a carrier when they get the employer has to send a report in pretty fast, right, as I recall? And the patient goes to the hospital, and I think this was mentioned earlier. Aren't you forcing the carriers to say someone fell at work, all we're liable for is a bruise? Immediately, they're going to say that immediately, and then you got a denial, then you're into a controversy when really no one wants to controvert this. They want the person to get treatment. And the next thing you know, you're spreading the parties out. Isn't that the net effect of that?
I don't believe so. I think we're just talking about a duty to be diligent by the insurance company to investigate the claim. What happened in this case, and what happens so often, is insurance companies just rock along, and as long as it's not running up too many bills, they're just fine with everything.
Well, it's just like everything else. If you're defending a case, you know, everything's fine, we're within a budget, and all of a sudden you get these extraordinary bills, and someone's asking you a question and raises a flag. So that's not unusual.
Well, except that here we have a statute that says you must deny the claim within 60 days. And that standard is contained in both 409.021 and 409.022.
So, if the insurance carrier denies initial claim, can they go back and reevaluate and say, we made a mistake, we're going to pay this now? Okay, they can do that, right?
Certainly.
So, then why not just deny them all and then go back and reevaluate them so they don't have to have this problem?
If they wanted to, but I think that would be in derogation of their responsibilities as an insurance carrier to follow the law and their duties to the injured worker, who is their insured after all. An injured worker is entitled to be treated as a first-party insured to a workers' comp carrier.
But, I mean, your argument is even if the worker didn't file a claim, they ought to be reasonable to go out there and investigate them. I mean, it's still somewhat an adversarial system. The worker comes in and says, this hurts. Whatever it is hurts. And then the insurer responds to that. Where your system is, the patient says, comes in and says, something hurts. Now tell me what it is. And if they can't figure it out, then they have to pay for whatever it is. Seems backwards from the whole way the system. What's the purpose of a notice of a claim if it's not to put them on notice of the claim?
Well, I think the notice of a claim puts them on notice that there's an injury, and that notice triggers a duty to investigate what the scope of the injury is.
But it also might trigger a duty to be as ambiguous as you can be, because if then I can argue they should have discovered it later, even though I didn't tell you that hurt at the time, then I get it all paid. I get my chiropractor bills paid forever.
Well, that would only apply if there was something to indicate that there was that diagnosis. I don't think it would apply to diagnoses that have not yet made or potentially could be made. We're only talking about a 60-day period. We're not talking about a long period. But this statute. I mean, this goes back to the statute. The statute was put in to compel insurance companies to be diligent and to respond to the initial claim promptly.
Let me talk about the rule real quick and make sure I understand your argument. If we were to consider this an extent of injury dispute, would you agree the plain language of Rule 124.3e defeats your argument?
Well,
I mean, does it rise or fall on extent?
I think the term extent of injury is a very unfortunate use of my argument, as I've said in my brief, is that extent of injury is an undefined term. There's no definition of extent of injury in either the rules or the statute. It's just
there is in the case law. And if we were to determine that under the law this is an extent of injury, do you agree that the plain language would control?
No, because I think the 10th Court of Appeals, as well as the 5th Court of Appeals in Dallas, have said is that this Rule 124.3 is talking about disputes that arise after the 60-day period. Now, what Counsel for Sorum has said about, well, extent of injury means medical disputes, the rules about medical disputes are completely different. That just means, does the bill get paid? It doesn't have anything to do with the underlying injury and whether the underlying injury is compensable or not.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The court will hear from the amicus curiae, Office of Injured Employee Counsel.
Hey, please, the court. My name is Elaine Cheney, and I'm with the Office of Injured Employee Counsel, which was created to protect the interests of injured employees as a class. And I think that we're here to urge that the Court of Appeals decision be affirmed, because I do think that this is an instance where you're talking, where this is a waiver issue and not an extent issue. And
do you think the argument rises and falls on whether we determine it is extent versus compensability?
Yes, I do think it does. I think it does rise and fall on that. And I think the reason that you get to this being and how the analysis was created and the question of the case law that talks about the nature of the injury will be defined by what could reasonably be discovered. I think that's the corollary to 409.021D, which lets an insurance carrier reopen the issue of compensability if there is newly discovered evidence. And so I think this notion that what you can find, the information that you can find during a reasonable investigation defines the nature of the compensable injury follows from the notion that you can reopen compensability only if there's evidence that you couldn't reasonably have discovered in the 60-day period.
So putting your argument together with your partner counsel at the table, the result would be more denials, especially if you could reopen it later with new evidence on compensability.
Well, I mean, there might be more denials.
I mean,
but I think
your position encourages more denials.
If the ability
to argue extent is narrowed, then insurers are going to deny more claims earlier if there's any doubt.
Well, I think what this does is this gives the insurance carriers based on their duty to investigate, they need to determine what the nature of the injury is. And if they determine that there's something in the medical records that they could reasonably discover in 60 days, it's something they don't think is related to the compensable injury, they can file a limited acceptance that says, I think that the injury is limited to the contusion or the sprain strain, whatever it might be. And then this is consistent with the purpose of...
If I were counsel for the carrier, that's what I would encourage the carrier to do. In any case where there is an injury and it looks, even on the face of it, it doesn't look that severe, then make sure that you limit your acceptance of compensability. And why wouldn't that be the case, and how would that promote the interest of employees?
Well, it would promote the interest of employees in the sense that what happens in this instance is not unique, and it happens very frequently. The cases will go along for very long periods of time, and treatment is given, and then it's only when there's a surgery or the more expensive treatment that there is then the denial, and the injured employee is then in the position of establishing, going back and trying to establish the causal connection late at this point. And if early on the decision is made that we believe it's limited to the contusion in this instance, then the injured employee and the doctor have an opportunity early on in the process to know, and everybody gets on the same page about what is being accepted. And if the injured employee then has to come forward and meet their burden of proof, it's earlier on in the process. Time has not gone on. There isn't a big thing in workers' comp always is the hassle factor, and we go on, and things get paid for, and then it's years later when suddenly something isn't paid for. And this is consistent with the notion and the what was happened in the 89 Act was to try to get the process streamlined and to make it so that people understood what was going to be paid for and what was not going to be paid for.
But it seems like if you go the other way, that you, if the carrier's not minding paying for everything, in most cases you're not going to all of a sudden develop a much serious something later on down the road. And if the carrier will accept these claims, whatever they are, and start paying for them, that takes friction out of the system, which is what we thought the modification was about, to take the friction out of the system. And in most cases, you're probably not going to have a degenerative something arise later on, are you, in the majority of cases?
I think the problem is, and this is not an unusual fact situation, it's people start out getting conservative treatment. The conservative treatment ends up not being successful in correcting the problem, and then suddenly a surgery is required, and that's when the process grinds to a halt and when the dispute exists.
But we really do want them to pay up front. We don't want the friction up front.
No, I agree. We want them to pay up front.
If the carrier's forced to deny anything other than a minor, if they have to deny anything other than a minor injury right up front, we immediately introduce friction of some nature in it, don't we? Because the employee and the employee's representative then has to say, wait a minute, you know, this might develop into a back problem or a nerve problem or something like that, and we have to dispute all that within the 60 days instead of just letting the carrier pay and pay and pay. And then if we develop a problem, we talk about the extent of it when that arises. It seems like we're front-loading friction by your position.
May I finish?
Please.
I think that what we're doing is permitting the injured employee and the doctor and the insurance carrier, everyone figuring out what the injury is, and if we're going to have a dispute of, I think we have to keep in mind that the only thing that they're going to waive is anything they could discover in the 60 days. So if anything that happens that arises and they don't know about until after the 60 days isn't subject to being waived. And I think just this permits it's consistent with having the carrier live up to its obligation to do a reasonable investigation, to engage in due diligence, and to let the injured employee and the doctor know what injuries are going to be paid for and what injuries are not.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Lepofsky, does SORM see or acknowledge any sort of outer limitation whatsoever in as to when a carrier can assert a extent of injury dispute?
Well, certainly it's within 45 days, Your Honor. Justice Will, the key is what is the consequence to the employer failing to do so? Here, the consequence of the employer failing to, or the carrier failing to do so is not waiver. It creates a compliance issue. There may be penalties with not doing it within the timely manner, but there is no waiver. That's specifically set out in the Texas Register, which said that this creates that type of issue. It doesn't create liability.
What are the penalties, and when and how do they arise?
The compensability, the payment involved or the penalties involved are pursuant to a formula, which I think is set out in the Texas Administrative Code at Section 180. It depends on factors, and I really wouldn't be able to walk you through all of the factors that relate to that, but there are provisions through which these penalties can be applied.
How often does this extent of injury dispute, like the one in this case, arise?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that we have necessary statistics that explain when this type of extensive
injury
can come up. There is some briefing and some materials that were prepared by Amicus, Texas Mutual Insurance Company, which include a report by the Texas Department of Insurance that reflects that these disputes run, I want to say, between 14% to 16% of the overall disputes. That may be off a hair, Your Honor.
I didn't understand the number.
Somewhere, I believe, between 14% and 16%.
14% and 16%?
Let me, if I may.
I just didn't understand what you said.
Yes, Your Honor, and I may be off on that. I apologize.
The brief, though.
It is in the, if you refer to the amicus brief of Texas Mutual Insurance Company, there are statistics including numbers and percentages of the disputes to the extent of injury disputes make up.
Where's the 45-day period you mentioned in response to my question earlier?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the full question.
Where's that 45-day period you mentioned in
response
to
that? That's referenced in Rule 124.3E, specifically, Your Honor. It's 45 days from the date of receipt of the medical bill.
Now, the medical bill has to be sent within 95 days.
That is correct, Mr. Plainwright. Now, there was a lot of discussion by opposing counsel regarding the carrier's duty to investigate. And I want to reiterate, again, under Rule 124.3A, that sets out several types of things carriers have to investigate. It doesn't mention extent of injury. Indeed, Rule 124.3 specifically excludes extent of injury from those types of things that need to be investigated. And we need to take a look at what the reason is for that, or at least who that harms. If a carrier does not investigate extent of injury, the carrier is going to be paying benefits for the injury for a longer period of time. The carrier has to pay benefits as they accrue. They can't terminate or reduce benefits unless they have reasonable grounds to do so. And then they can't actually terminate or reduce those benefits until 10 days prior to giving notice of the termination of the benefits. So if a carrier waits to investigate, the only person really harmed here is the carrier. The employee actually benefits by having longer than the 60 days. The employee actually gets the benefit of having that notice of the medical bill plus the 45 days because they're going to be receiving benefits which otherwise would have been likely terminated if an extent of injury dispute was filed.
And if the carrier wins on its extent of injury claim, does the employee have to pay back the benefits?
In that situation, Your Honor, the carrier would look to the subsequent injury fund, which is funded by situations where there is a wrongful death and there's no beneficiary to pay wrongful death benefits to. So it looks to the subsequent injury fund, Your Honor.
So the employee doesn't have to pay any of those benefits that were inappropriately paid?
No, it does not go back to the employee to do so.
So if she hurt her knee and it looked as if it could be treated conservatively, but 120 days later, it looked as if it was going to require surgery, would that be an issue of compensability or extent of injury?
It would be an issue of extent of injury, Your Honor. The extent of injury issue is something that is sort of formed a long time. It continues a long time. The compensability issue is one that's decided within the 60 days, which is, was there an injury at all that would be covered? Then what's the scope of it? That is defined over the course of receiving medical bills, making evaluations of the medical bills, and then either paying or denying them.
So your view of the rule is that the waiver in the statute is not very extensive. It's on the job or off the job. Was it intentional or not? Was the person intoxicated? Whatever the few exceptions there are, right?
The waiver in the statute provides is a waiver of a defense to all liability for payment for benefits. It's a valuable right that's being given up, but it is only limited to that totality of the circumstances.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All right.